What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. The history the government hopes you never learn. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show today. It's Tuesday, February 8th, 2011, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. There is a prevailing rumor around our control room that our little problem with our outbound feed has been fixed. So far, so good today, which means if you call in to 800-313-9443, I can now actually hear you and your questions without sounding like, you know, Johnny Mathis on the microphone here. So once again, the phone number is 800-313-9443. Manny's in the control room, twiddling the dials, keeping us out of trouble, ready to answer your phone calls. Before we get into the heavy news, just something I really felt we needed to comment on. Apparently, the Catholic Church, in an effort to reach out to the new, younger generation, not in the sexual way, have issued an iPhone app for confession where, you know, bless me, iPhone, for I have sinned. And apparently this is an adjunct to the process of confession. Now, I don't have the app myself. I'm not Catholic. I'm not fond of the Catholics. If it weren't for the Catholics, I would have been a rich Hollywood Jew. But they charge for it, and I'm not going to give them $1.99. But apparently they have this thing, and you use this to do your confessing of your sins, which means every hacker in America now has access to all of your inner secrets, and then I guess it sends you the penance and, you know, 10 Hail Marys and you're back out on the street, or use the iPhone camera to take pictures of yourself without your clothes and mail them in to Father Flaccid or whatever the heck is going on there. But I just thought it's just kind of how weird and bizarre it is getting out there in terms of religion trying to integrate itself in a modern world which has long since outgrown theocracy as a mode of social organization. So, moving right along here, obviously the news for most of us continues to be the situation in Egypt, although I have noticed that America's corporate media is sort of marginalizing and trivializing this. Is almost scarcely a mention now, mostly on the bottom crawls. They're talking about, you know, the oil fire that's out there and this tabloid publicity stunt rape trial for Julian Assange. You're trying desperately to keep his name out there in the forefront of everything. Baby abandoned in a South Carolina toilet. Koreas are talking, and a big, huge feature they just did on teenage sexting messages, and should the parents be held liable, because they're going to make that illegal now and say, oh, if your teenagers are using their iPhones to send sexy messages to each other, the parents will have to pay a huge fine. Well, my message to teenagers is stop using your iPhones and smartphones and computers to send sexy messages to each other. Come on over here to What Really Happened and read how the U.S. government is going to turn you all into soldiers to go out and fight World War III for no other reason than to make the banks richer than they already are. So that's what we're doing with that whole situation. Alrighty, now I think probably to sort of sum up and tease us into the next segment, the Obama administration has abandoned even the pretense of standing for democracy and the founding principles of the United States of America, and is now openly acknowledging that their agenda is for Mubarak to remain in power. Remember how everybody was kind of hemming and hawing, and the government was saying, well, we really can't say that. Well, they're saying it now. It was reported in the New York Times and several other main corporate media outlets. So this is not just a rumor. The Obama administration is refusing to support the idea of the immediate resignation of President Mubarak. Now, a lot of people are accusing Obama of sitting on the fence and flipping back and forth and waffling, and that's not what has been going on. Obama is caught between Israel's dictate that Mubarak be kept in place because he's a loyal, useful puppet for Israel, and of course the fact that the United States is supposed to be founded on the principle of government with the consent of the governed and the right of the people to alter and abolish a government that is not working for them. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know if they don't do something by and by. The rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. The panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And if you were getting all of your information about the world from the American corporate TV news, you could be forgiven for forgetting that there is, in fact, a major confrontation between the people and the government going on over in Egypt. It is barely getting any mention. The headline news is the Texas. There's been another refinery blow up in Texas. Van Halen gave his guitar to the Smithsonian. Huzzah, huzzah, huzzah. And, and of course the revelation that it turns out there never really was any problem with those electronic braking systems or accelerators on the Toyota. So they're off the hook. That's the big news right now. There's scarcely a mention of what's going on in Egypt other than in the lower crawls so far. I've been zipping around the TV channels here with my little magic remote control here. And it's, as far as Egypt is concerned, it's a non-story. It's just gone away. It's a desert. They're mentioning it just enough to make it look like, yeah, we're paying attention to what's going on over there. And the reason they're doing this is very obvious, I think. President Pussy has basically come down on the side of the tin pot dictator. And in so doing, has committed, in my opinion, high treason against the founding principles of the United States of America. They have been trying to find some way that they could sell the necessity for going in and crushing the democracy movement in Egypt without making it look like a U.S. attack on democracy itself. And they have failed. They're not getting any traction on any of the propaganda. So they're just going to pretend like it's not an issue any longer. Israel has said, thou shalt keep Mubarak in power. President Pussy has said, yes, sir, I absolutely will do that. And that's what's going on. We've got warships in the area, Marine divisions on the way, and as of today, the U.S. government is basically saying they back Omar Suleiman, who's the CIA's torture rendition flight mastermind, to be the new leader, but Mubarak gets to stay on during the transition period. And, of course, the regime itself, the governmental structure that enabled Mubarak to do what he did, that stays in place as well. That's not what the Egyptian protesters want. They want the whole government gone. There was a huge protest out in front of Egypt's parliament demanding they dissolve. They want to get rid of the whole corrupt system, not just a single figurehead. Suleiman's coming out and saying, oh, no, no, please, no, stop protesting, go away. We have a roadmap to a new democratic Egypt. And it sounds really good until you remember their Palestinians had a roadmap too. And it hasn't worked out for them. It's just another delaying tactic. It's like Obama when he was running for president and he came out with this change in hope. Yes, we will hope that there's going to be a change. But the real subtext is go along with the system, pay your taxes, breed soldiers, let the banks take your homes. Somewhere down the road, things may get better. You just have to be patient until then. And, of course, it never gets better. It just gets worse. This is more of the same. They're trying to con the people of Egypt to going back to their little slave pens, hoisting those stones up to the top of Mubarak's pyramid, and just sit there and dream of a better world instead of wanting that better world to come along now. In a way, it's kind of a continuation of the dodge that we get from the Bible magnates. You know, yes, your life on this earth is misery, and the lords and ladies are going to abuse you and take from you and leave you living in the mud. But don't worry, after you die, things are going to get really, really good. So be patient and, you know, render unto Caesar all of his money that he wants. And don't fight back, and don't stand up and strike against them, and don't rebel, and just be obedient. And don't worry, once you're dead, everything's going to be great. You're going to have gold and silver and angels and wings and 47 raisins and whatever else is they're promising to get you to go along with the dodge. And, of course, it's a perfect scam because nobody ever comes back from the grave and said, hey, I didn't get what you promised me. But it is. It's a scam for the people to give the rulers all their wealth now on the belief that somewhere down the road, things will get better, whether it's in heaven or the new democratic Egypt. And it's a con, and the people of Egypt are smart enough to have figured that out. So where does this leave the United States of America? It basically leaves the United States of America with this uncomfortable realization that our government absolutely has walked away from the founding principles of our nation. Our government, in attacking the democracy movement in Egypt, is attacking democracy. You cannot have it both ways. If you truly support the founding principles of the United States of America, you cannot go out and support these little dictators. And we know the United States has done it many, many times in the past. But in those days, when they had the control of the corporate media, and the corporate media had a lock on the minds of Americans, Americans would drink the Kool-Aid that somehow putting in the Shah of Iran, or putting in Marcos over the Philippines, or Batista in Cuba, or Pinochet in Chile was a good thing, that we were bringing democracy to those people, even though democracy was exactly what we'd taken away from them. But today, in this day and age, in the age of the internet, the people of the United States and the people of the world see exactly what the United States is doing. Obama is saying one thing, while his administration does exactly the opposite. Now, I'm a paleocon. I'm a conservative of the old-fashioned kind of limited government. That government governs best which governs least. And I want to live in the nation that is described in the Declaration of Independence and in the Bill of Rights. I want to live in that nation. We don't live there now. And I am keenly aware of all the Americans who fought and were injured and were killed for those principles in the Declaration of Independence, going all the way back to the American Revolution. When you discard the principles in the Declaration of Independence in order to support a dictator who's friendly to Israel, you are basically telling all those millions of Americans who have died over the last 200 plus years, your lives didn't matter. Your sacrifice didn't matter. You were just pawns for our foreign policy so we could get to a certain situation where we can go out and play the great game. What you believed you were fighting and dying for is no longer important, because we are the true believers and we know what's best for the world, and what's best for Israel is for Mubarak to stay, even though it means basically denying to the people of Egypt that which we supposedly hold most dear ourselves. Government that rules with the consent of the governed, and the inalienable right of any people anywhere to alter or abolish a government that is destructive of the common good. All right, we're going to go to the phone. Steve in New York. Aloha, Steve. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so aloha, Mike. I just want to, sort of is like about 2 weeks old. Mullah Omar was had a heart attack and went to Pakistan for treatment, and they protected him. He was like the head of the Taliban, and this little small blurb, like, you know, in the New York papers here, and just wonder what your take was on that, because he's like the head of the Taliban, and the ISI protected him. U.S. intelligence admitted they protected him in the paper, and this guy had a heart attack, and no one will really report it in alternative media. I'm very surprised about that.
Well, there's a lot going on in the world, and we're basically focused on certain things, and I know there's a lot of stuff going on in Pakistan that we should be paying attention to a little bit more. Certainly that American official who turns out his claim that he worked for Blackwater, that's not come under question. It looks like there may have been some kind of a faction fight with ISI. The U.S. government is claiming diplomatic immunity. The people of Pakistan are not happy with that one tiny bit. But as far as the United States creating and then protecting the enemies that they wave at us, that's an old story. We know that Osama bin Laden was codenamed Tim Osman for the CIA, and he was traveling all over the place. He was meeting with the CIA July before 9/11 at the American hospital in Riyadh, where he was being treated for his deteriorating health kidney problem. And the CIA went and talked with him, and they didn't arrest him, even though he was supposedly, even then, on the top 10 most wanted list for acts of terror. And then, of course, 9/11 happened, and then later that year, Osama bin Laden died. But we see this all the time, these phony threats that are waved at us, like Adam Perlman and Joseph Cohen and Zachary Chesser, who are pretending to be Adam Gadon Yusuf al-Khattab and something, I forget Chesser's nom de terre that he's using. But these are people who are operating freely within our society, and the media is saying, oh, how could we have terrorists in our midst? Well, go arrest them. If they're really a problem, go arrest them and stop groping us at the airport. But, of course, the United States government needs these enemies. In a way, it's not unlike the movie Canadian Bacon, where, you know, Alan Alda plays the president, and he's so desperate for an enemy, he tries to get into war with Canada. Because without an enemy, he has nothing on which to rally the American people through a very, very difficult economic time. So I know there's a lot of stuff going on in Pakistan. You know, when I do a longer show or there's another one of me, we'll take a look at it. At the moment, though, the focus continues to be on Egypt, because as Egypt goes, basically so will the Middle East. And very obviously, the United States government has decided that they had better throw some cold water on this global revolution while they still can in Egypt. Personally, I don't think it's going to happen. I think the violence is going to escalate. And if the United States sends troops into Egypt, they're not going to be able to hide from the rest of the world that they're doing it to basically put down another democracy movement and prop up yet another dictator, and the entire Middle East is going to explode. All across the Middle East, we're hearing more and more where people are saying they're tired of these rulers that have been imposed on them by the United States and Israel. They're all getting ready to stand up together. This thing is not over. Even if the Egyptian protests are put down by violent force, it's just going to make matters worse. We got to take a break here. Steve, thanks a lot for the phone call. We'll be back with David and Dennis after these words from our sponsors.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go to the phones. David in New Mexico. Aloha, David. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, hello, Michael. You know, another good reason Obama is in a tight spot with Egypt is if he advocates publicly that Mubarak should step down because the people of Egypt are demanding it, it just may mean that the people in the United States have a right to demand that he step down as well.
We
and
do.
Of course, I would be one of those people that would ask for that.
We've had that right ever since Obama ran up to the United Nations to explain away while it was okay for Israel to attack Americans in international waters and kill them. On that day, he lost legitimacy, in my opinion. But what the proper course of action for the United States should have been is not to get involved. This is Egypt's problem.
And if
Mubarak has driven his people to the point of revolution, that's Mubarak's screw-up. And we should have stayed out of it, because we have enough problems here at home that we have to take care of, where we don't have the luxury, let alone the money, of going around to the rest of the world and tinkering with these other governments. You want to know why there's terrorism in the world and why there's so many countries in the world that hate the United States? Because we're constantly screwing around with other people's countries.
We need to stop. And, you know, the idea here is if this thing spreads, if every country in the world experienced the people rising up with leaderless resistance to demand that their government step down and be corrected, none of these countries could afford to send their militaries to other countries to interfere. And I think all of our countries need to take our governments to task, right here at home especially.
We do, for two basic reasons. One, and we're going to be talking about this a little later in the show with regards to Ireland, you've got these private central bankers that are still insisting the people must be impoverished to pay off their gambling debts. And the other one, of course, is the foreign entanglements. And go back and read President George Washington's farewell address, where he says the future security and safety and prosperity of the United States of America is dependent on not getting tangled up in other people's problems. And virtually every president since, I think, John Adams, has ignored that advice. The reason the United States is in such trouble is because we have gutted our own economy and our own infrastructure to pay for all these wars on Israel's enemies. And even in Egypt, the United States was remaining neutral and was just saying, well, you know, that's democracy in progress, and Egypt has to sort this out for themselves. Then Israel comes out and says, oh, no, we Mubarak must be kept in power because we have a deal with him, and we can count on him not to, you know, rock the Israel's boat here. And almost immediately started seeing Secretary of State Hillary Clinton saying, yes, Israel, we will keep Mubarak in power. And Obama's been waffling in the media trying to find some way where he can reconcile supporting the dictator over the democracy movement in a nation that is supposed to be founded on democracy. And he's failed miserably, which is why, you know, now we're seeing the de-emphasis of Egypt in the corporate media, although they're talking about it now. But they're talking about it solely in terms of how it affects America and Israel, and they're not talking about the Egyptians themselves. We should have stayed out of this.
People, they never have in any country.
They should have stayed out of it. The United States has no business being in there, certainly not at the behest of a third-party foreign power like Israel. And it just underscores the fact that the American people have lost control of this government, our government, like that of Egypt. And like that of the Palestinian Authority, is fully involved with Israel and is running the United States for the benefit of Israel. All the money that goes from us to Israel, all the weapons that goes from us to Israel. Israel can kill our people in international waters. Our government won't do a thing about it. It doesn't get any more obvious than that, that we are the victims of subversion. We are Israeli-occupied territory.
We've become a communist, fascist country, and it's not just Israel, but we have a global empire, and we're financing military bases and excursions and tyranny all over the world and into outer space, and it's just terrible.
It is, and Karzai is now negotiating for permanent U.S. bases in Afghanistan. If you have family members in Afghanistan, they're not coming home anytime soon. They're going to make it permanent. Yesterday, then they announced that, oh, yeah, we're going to be staying in Iraq way, way, way beyond Obama's promised withdrawal day. That was another completely broken promise. It's not going to get any better. So
no, it isn't. But Obama needs to be he should be tried for treason, I believe.
With
He's
the entire
got plenty
Congress.
Of counts for that.
With the entire Congress, when you turn your back on the founding principles of this nation, that is the highest of high treason.
Our government sides with the Mexican government against the United States, states like Arizona, even though there's military units from Mexico in Arizona territory with these drug cartels. The government has even posted signs in Arizona warning the public to stay out of public lands because the Mexican criminals have taken it over. And so,
oh yeah, they're ceding sections of the United States to Mexico. And I mean, you know, look at where all of this effort that they're putting over there, with regards to Egypt and Israel and all these wars. Meanwhile, we have a major disaster for three states here, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. They still don't have the gas turned on, in large sections of New Mexico, and another winter storm is coming in. Animals are freezing to death in their barns and some of the zoos because the gas and electric heat has been shut off. But nobody's concerned about that. They're too busy playing the great game in Egypt. Thank you for the call, David. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go back to the phones. Dennis in Michigan. Aloha, Dennis. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
Aloha, Michael. I have 2 points, because one is in response to a recent call that I heard while I was waiting. But my main point was, you quoted Jesus, render unto Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
I have an interesting thesis on that.
Well, what I'm quoting is the people who wrote that story, which may not have been quoting Jesus, the real Jesus, but go ahead.
Okay, let's just take the fact of it, okay?
People
were objecting to paying taxes, and he said, well, grab a coin and look at it, and who's on it, Caesar, then give, kind of like he just said, give it back.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a proposal, create money that says, without debt, debt-free money that says, we the people, and put the quote on it, render unto each other.
Okay? I like that, but you know, we actually had something like that when this country started. It was called the Silver Certificate. And that was the lawful money. And the silver certificate was just a claim check because the lawful money of the land was the silver and the gold. And
it's
that was
the
nickel in the 5-cent coin, the copper in the penny, that was the money. And it's only when the private central bankers come in and they bribe their way to a license to counterfeit and they just print up paper that's got nothing at all behind it, and that's what debases our monetary system.
Yeah, there's nothing new. I mean, it's not like this is a new idea. It's just, you know,
it's the
twist.
Same old criminality.
Many of, you know, people who listen to this radio are very conscientious Christians, and they need to look at the money system. The other thing, Egypt, what's going on in Egypt, I think most of the world is very hip to the confessions of an economic hitman, to the tactics that he lays out in his best-selling book from 2004. The world's hip to it. The U.S. generally is not. Every time I talk to someone about it, they're like, oh, I never heard of him, you know, John Perkins. So
yeah,
the world is hip to this, and that they're just saying, heck no, sorry.
Well, you know, it's interesting you'd mention that. One of the stories that we linked to whatreallyhappened.com was this little puff piece in the media saying that Americans believe the economy is improving. And, of course, you look at that and you say, okay, tell us that 2010 was the hottest year on record again. And you go in and what you find out is they're saying, well, maybe all Americans don't think the economy is improving. But for the young and wealthy, they think times are really good. And, of course, if you read the comments that attended that article, everybody was calling on that one. Because, yeah, if you're young and wealthy, life is pretty good. But if you're wealthy at the expense of everybody else around you, that's not necessarily a good thing or a good direction for the country to be going. Because obviously, having lost our manufacturing, and we're a net importer of food now. I mean, that's how bad things are going. We're just plunging deeper and deeper into debt. Congress is screaming match with Bernanke over raising the debt limit yet again. And as we saw on Wall Street these last few years, the people who are getting wealthy are doing so by gaming the system and just rigging the rules so that money just sort of flows to them without having to do anything for it. And that, of course, may be good for them, and I'm sure they're having a really good time, and they're convinced that whatever gods they sacrificed to and intended the world to be that way. But we understand that for an economic system to be a system and to work properly, money must be flowing at all levels in all segments of our society. And clearly, yep, in the case of the United States, that has ceased to be.
Well, I look at the idea of flow. You just mentioned that when I met a rich family one time, and I was very prejudiced against the rich, and the guy was extremely generous, the father.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like he lets money go through him. And that way I can not be that prejudiced
well,
against
can,
him. Well,
can I insert something here? Okay.
Yeah.
I personally don't have a problem with people being rich. There was a time in my life when I considered myself sort of borderline rich, and I've known a lot of very wealthy people. And some of them, well, a good example would be Henry Ford, who went out of his way to make sure his workers got a good wage because he understood his employees were also going to be his customers and that the best way to become prosperous was to make the community around you prosper. And that was a wisdom that was sacrificed on the altar of Adam Smith and burned up in the fire of greed is good that seized our financial establishment back in the 1980s.
Well,
and
what did Henry Ford say about the, if everyone knew about the
If everyone understood our banking system, there'd be a revolution by morning, yeah. which is a different topic. But the point I'm making is there are people who've become wealthy by coming up with really good ideas for new products and services or more efficient ways to do things that used to be done. And we cannot fault people like that for being wealthy. Steve Jobs, perfect example. Nobody begrudges him the fortune that he made by creating the Apple Computer Corporation. Okay, what we have a problem with is the fact that right now 47% of all corporate profit in the United States comes from the financial services sector, who produce nothing of value. They're playing with these counterfeit notes that come out of the Federal Reserve System. They shuffle them around, they repackage them, they create these gambling derivative, little game tokens that they play in this giant open-air casino called Wall Street, and they set up the system to simply yank money out of the general population and put it in their pockets. And when they can't do it directly, they go to the government to say, yeah, yank a couple of $1 trillion out of the American people and give it to us because we're really cool and we deserve it. And what most Americans now are just coming to realize as they head to the supermarket and the gas station and they look at those skyrocketing prices, every time Ben Bernanke turns on that printing press to shower money all over Wall Street or all over the U.S. Congress, the real result is actual buying power. Real wealth is being taken out of your pocket. It's like Lord Voldemort is holding sway over Washington, D.C. and New York, and he waves his wand, and all of a sudden the money that's in your pocket shrinks. And that's the real result of all this runaway hyperinflation coming out of those printing presses. So it is not an abstract, remote argument about whether Ben Bernanke is going to print up more money to give to Wall Street or if Congress is going to raise the debt ceiling. If they do, you will suffer directly because of it, and it's time to get angry and say no. If we are a free people, we have the freedom to say no. There is no freedom without the freedom to say no. We need to regain that. We need to own the fact that we, the American people, have a right, and in this case, a moral imperative, to say no.
And to the international listeners, the United States is still benefiting from being basically backed by the petrodollar. You know, that still is happening, and it's going away.
That's eroding rapidly. More and more countries are, you know, the U.S. government is trying to, like, you know, downplay it, but more and more countries are doing trade without going through the dollar. More and more countries are trading for oil without going through the dollar. The writing is on the wall, and what is so angering and frustrating...
And when that happens, we're with the rest of the world. We're with Egypt, with Greece, you name it.
I think it's imminent. I think that's why Secretary of State Hillary Clinton brought all 260 U.S. ambassadors back to Washington, D.C. this week for a big confab session that is, whatever they're talking about is so secret, they don't even dare send it through the encrypted channels to the embassies. And, history is definitely on your side in this thing. The United States government got out of the crash of 1907 by getting into World War I. They got out of the crash of 1929 by getting into World War II. Here we are in the crash of 2007, and look how hard our government is trying to start wars with everybody. Now they're talking about going into Egypt. And the idea is, you know, we're gonna go into war, put ourselves even deeper into hock into the international bankers, because the banks make money from war no matter which side wins, and they just absolutely love that. And the idea is that the President Obama is hoping that Americans will once again say, oh, even though it's hardship and, you know, we have to make do without food because the troops need it, and we'll accept rationing and we'll accept a greatly reduced standard of living because, after all, there's a war on, and we'll salute the flag and we'll forget all about the government malfeasance and corruption that got us to this point. It's not going to work this time, but that's what they're hoping for. That, of course, and the possibility that the United States can go out and simply murder all the other nations that we owe money to and get off the hook that way. But obviously, the U.S. government has run out of options. They cannot get the money addicts to alter their behavior. There is no Wall Street 12-step program out there. And so going out and committing mass murder wrapped in a flag is pretty much the only option the United States government seems to have left.
Yep. Issuing debt-free money that says we the people on it and render unto each other, it seems like a good idea to me.
Well, it's a very good idea. Hitler did exactly the same thing, and immediately the bankers organized a global boycott against Germany. 1933, the headlines around the world were blaring, Judea declares war on Germany, and they were determined to crush...
He bartered, too. His country bartered with
yeah,
other
they
countries.
Yeah, they did barter. They did equal, everything equal. They could to run an economy outside the control of the private central bank that had been imposed on the Weimar Republic in the wake of World War I, that had been responsible for the starvation and deterioration of Germany's population. And Hitler said, we're going to change that. And he did. And he said, we're going to operate outside the private central banks. And immediately, the private central bankers tried to destroy Germany's economy. It was the anger and rage from the very obvious attempt to reimpose starvation on the German people by the bankers that triggered this backlash of anger and rage and hate that Hitler used to fuel the eventual push into war. I mean, basically, if you really think about it from an economic point of view, the international bankers left Hitler with no choice but to go to war to resolve his economic problems, which is the same situation the United States is in right now.
In favor of concentration of power, I think issuing currency should be a mass thing that's done by a body, you know, not by a single dictator, definitely, because they can control.
Well, I mean, that was the reason when the United States was founded. And it was a huge debate. It was not exactly an easy decision. But the founding fathers decided that they were going to go with the financial system that had worked for the colonies, which was the government prints up the money, spends it into circulation to acquire what the government needs, then taxes it back at the end of the fiscal year in order to balance the books. And it's a zero-sum game. The government spends exactly what it taxes. And it worked really well for the American people. But then you had the private central bankers, starting with Alexander Hamilton.
Hamilton, yeah.
Yeah, and said, oh, no,
versus
no, no.
Jefferson.
A bank, yeah, and again, and versus Aaron Burr. And Hamilton said, we must have a private central bank that will issue the money at interest. That way we'll run up debt and we'll have a good credit rating for international commerce. And it was a big, huge song and dance, because the only difference between the system that we started this country with and the system that we have today is there's a private central bank charging interest on all the people's currency. And that's the only difference. And the only thing it does is take real wealth out of the pockets of the American people and put it in the pockets of the private bankers. And it's not just being done here in the United States. It's being done in the European Union. It's being done in all of these countries that have had to accept a private central bank as the monetary issuing authority under their government. And inevitably, it plunges the people of the world into poverty. That's what they're standing up and fighting back against. In Iceland, probably going to have riots in Ireland now. There's a big fight over there. Tunisia, Egypt, Greece, Great Britain, all of these places. And it will come to the United States of America. It cannot be avoided. And the big question is, will the money addicts surrender their money addiction gracefully, or will there be blood in the streets? And unfortunately, sadly, I fear it will be the latter.
Yeah, and the bankers had the gall to ask Lincoln for 30% loans for the Civil War.
Oh yeah, that's why he issued.
Why did they feel they could even get away with that? You know,
well, because at the time they thought they were the only source of financing for the war. And, of course, Lincoln basically said, I'm the president. I can print up the money at the Treasury myself. And that's exactly what he did.
Right.
And he went back to the system that America was founded on, and it worked very well. It not only financed the war, but it was working so well for American commerce that people were avoiding the bank-issued notes. And that's why as soon as Lincoln was assassinated, Congress took the greenbacks out of circulation and destroyed them, and people were forced back into the clutches of the private bankers. Same thing with John F. Kennedy. He issued Executive Order 11110, put about $4.5 billion of his U.S. notes into circulation, money that the people could use without having to pay interest on it to the Federal Reserve. And 5 months later, he was shot dead in Dealey Plaza, Dallas, Texas, and his U.S. notes were immediately taken out of circulation. And John J. McCloy, president of the World Bank, president of the Chase Manhattan Bank, was one of the Warren Commission members. And you have to wonder, if this is all about a crazed loan nut assassin, what was a banker doing on the Warren Commission? I don't care how good a banker he is. He's not qualified as a homicide investigator. And yet, he was on the Warren Commission. Why, if not to work to conceal the financial dimensions of the assassination of the President of the United States?
History repeats.
I mean, they tried to
itself.
Assassinate Andrew Jackson, but fortunately the guns malfunctioned.
History keeps repeating, eh?
Yeah, it really does. Last I heard, the pistols that this financial thing, this central bank versus government-issued currency, was one of the many issues that led to the duel between Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. And I believe J.P. Morgan actually still has that set of dueling pistols. They went out and said, oh, yeah, we got to have those things. And I think they still own them.
In the Wikipedia article about the cause of the War of 1812, I inserted some factual information from a source, and it got rejected, you know, being kind of a monetary reason for that war. But anyway.
Well, you know,
all the money we the people and render unto each other, and I think we'll be good.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, Wikipedia is very compromised. There's a very overt bias there. There's now a counterpart called Muslimpedia, which we link to at whatreallyhappened.com. Really? And it's at whatreallyhappened.com. And I'm not saying Muslimpedia is any less biased. I'm not saying it's any less biased, but remember, if you have a diversity of opinion running
right.
checks and balances on each other, you're going to get a more accurate picture of the world. When media is controlled by just one group, you're going to be taken for a ride. Doesn't matter which button you push, what dial you switch to, what channel you're locked into, you're going to be fed a steady diet of whatever the powers that be want you to be thinking. Mind control is not some strange science fiction ray that shines on you and turns you into a zombie. All mind control is controlling the brain by controlling the brain's knowledge. Control what you think by controlling what you know. And that's all it is. That's all that mind control really is. And when you have one group controlling all the media, that is mind control. Thank you for the call, Dennis. We're going to let you go. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, last segment of hour number one. We're about to lose our WWCR shortwave radio audience, and a reminder that if you'd like to listen to hour number two, that you can go over to republicbroadcasting.org and click in there and pick up on the show and continue out to the end of our discussions today. Phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. I can hear you! I can hear you! And so call on in, and we'll have a lot more fun for hour number two of the show. As I mentioned earlier, the Egyptian people are not just angry with Mubarak himself, for the very simple reason that Mubarak could not do all the evil that he has done without a government structure formed around him willing to carry out his wishes and abuse the Egyptian people for the benefit of the International Monetary Fund, and obviously to suit Israel's concerns in the region, including the starvation blockade of the Gazans. So getting rid of Mubarak is not going to change anything, especially because the U.S. is already pushing Omar Suleiman to take his place. Now, the online polls in Egypt are showing clearly that the Egyptian people want al-Baradei as their new ruler, the man who stood up to Israel when he was head of the International Atomic Energy Agency. So the Egyptian people don't want just Mubarak gone, and they don't want to replace a tyrant with a torturer. That's not a solution. They want the entire system to be gone. I mean, getting rid of Mubarak and putting Suleiman in his place is like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and the boys getting rid of King George III and then inviting the Prince of Wales to come back in and start running the place. It really does not make a lot of sense. It doesn't solve any problems, does it? So in addition to Mubarak, basically the Egyptian people want the entire government scrapped. They want a whole new government. They are exercising the right of the people to alter or abolish a government that has become destructive of the basic principles of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Not sure exactly what that one means, but life and liberty and prosperity. We all have a right to earn a good living by the strength of our own skills. And that is being taken away from the Egyptian people. It's being taken away from us. More and more, the fruits of our labors, the product of our creativity and our industry, are siphoned off for the benefit of Wall Street and Israel and this ravenous war machine that is just making us hated around the world. So the Egyptian people, in addition to ousting Mubarak, they're calling for the complete dissolution of the entire Egyptian parliament. They want the whole system scraped out, and then they want to start from scratch. Not unlike what happened with the USSR, where they kicked out the old Soviet government and they began a whole new republic, and that worked out very well. Or Romania, following the execution of Ceausescu and his wife, and we put the video of that up at whatreallyhappened.com yesterday, as a reminder that world leaders do mess up bad enough to be killed by their own populations. Romania formed a new government, and they're doing a lot better than they did before. In fact, it is an historical truth that when there is a genuine revolution by the people, in the aftermath, things are always better for the people. If it's a fake revolution that overthrows a popular leader to impose a dictator, things get worse. Pinochet being the obvious example, where the U.S. went into Chile and overthrew the elected government of Allende to impose the dictator Pinochet. And things got worse for Chile. Same thing in 1953, when the United States ousted the elected government of Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran and imposed the Shah. And things got really, really bad. So you need to be careful. Not all revolutions are honest. I'm convinced this one in Egypt is, just as I was convinced last year's in Iran was a manufactured fake that fell flat on its face, and deservedly so. But the Egyptian people understand getting rid of just Mubarak won't solve anything. The whole government needs an overhaul. We'll be back after station identification.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
All this twisted steel was swept away. Did these remaining holes reveal what really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're doing hour number two. And just a real quick mention about that last commercial you heard about the Republic trading group. I think pretty much everybody understands that diversifying your immediate wealth into some other negotiable, fungible medium is a really good idea right now. If all of your purchasing power is in this pretty printed piece of paper called the Federal Reserve Notes, if there is a major collapse or hyperinflation, which we're already into, having an alternative wealth preservation device mechanism, it really makes a lot of sense. I know a lot of people have been watching silver going up and down and going up and down and going up and down, and I know there are a lot of people who buy silver and gold, and I guess now copper, for potential investment and profit making. But you know something? Even setting aside the idea whether or not you will actually make or lose a little bit of money in the transition into these metals, the idea is that the metals are always going to hold their value, where the dollar, the paper dollars, the fiat currency, the counterfeit, the legalized counterfeit currency called the Federal Reserve Note, could and probably will evaporate somewhere down the road. I have a collection of paper money that I've just acquired through the years, and it's absolutely, completely, totally worthless because it's from governments that insisted on a private central bank just printing up the money and putting it in circulation, and when the governments collapsed, the money became instantly worthless. And I got a whole batch of this. It was sent to me by people when they saw I was collecting this oddball form of collecting defunct currencies. And I used to have it in picture frames all over the wall and everything before I moved, and now it's just sitting in a box. But I really ought to get it out and start scanning it and putting it up as a display at whatreallyhappened.com. Paper notes without anything to back them cannot be trusted. There is a long and very depressing history of paper notes that are based on nothing more than the word of the issuing bank and the issuing government. And as we've learned to our horror over the last couple of years, the word of America's banks cannot be relied on, as demonstrated by the fraudulent mortgage-backed security disaster, which did not need to happen, according to the FCIC report. And of course, the word of the U.S. government is utterly worthless going back to Saddam's nuclear bombs. So if you have any extra cash left around, you know, getting into this kind of metals, gold and silver, not even with the expectation of making a profit, maybe even willing to take a little bit of loss from the dealer straddle, but it's going to hang on to its value a heck of a lot more readily than America's paper currency, especially as more and more countries start avoiding the dollar, as Mexico just did only a week ago. All right, we got callers piling up on the line here. Paul in New Jersey, aloha. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
Michael, first of all, I want to compliment you because you absolutely get it about what our approach should towards Egypt should be as a nation, which is steer clear of foreign entanglements.
Right.
But also, steer clear of permanent alliances. That is exactly another great phrase that George Washington said in his farewell address. And this is the problem. And, you know, when you start to not like the national favorite, you become suspect. You become a thought criminal. And this is what happens to people who are critical of our excessive alliance and allegiance and fealty towards the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we become criminalized, we become suspect, and it's almost as though we've imported the external wars that are going on in the Mideast into our country because
it's like an infection. It absolutely is. We have to take a break here, Paul, for some commercials. Do not go away. I want to pick up this discussion with you on the other side of the commercial break. Jim in New Hampshire, we're going to be getting to you in the next segment. I promise. Drink some coffee, walk around, open a window. No, forget about opening the window. It's freezing out there. But we will be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. Join Mike on the air. Call toll-free 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Paul in New Jersey, talking about the situation in Egypt. And, yeah, in a mature world, where the United States government does not have to justify its existence and the high taxation and support of the world's most massive military establishment by constantly tinkering with other people's countries, we should have let the Egyptians settle this for themselves. When the United States was becoming the United States, when we stopped being part of the British Empire, when we kicked out King George III, and by the way, there was no gradual transition, we just started shooting, and when they got tired of being shot, they left. But remember, the British brought in foreign mercenaries, the Hessians, okay? And the American people did not like it, and we shot a lot of those Hessians. Well, if Mubarak brings in the United States, you know, obviously Americans are going to become targets in the backlash. But apparently, this is not important to Obama. Because all that really matters is that Israel gets what it wants and gets Mubarak kept in place in Egypt. And for that, President Barack Obama is willing to sacrifice the lives of Americans. All of the money that is being spent to put these warships and Marines in position for a possible invasion. At the same time, of course, that Texans and New Mexicans and Arizonans are in the cold and dark as yet another killer winter storm that the government said was never going to happen, come settling in over us. So it really is, I think at this point, you would have to be absolutely in a drug-induced state of denial to not understand the extent to which Israel has hijacked the American government to its own purposes. We are Israeli-occupied territory here.
I concur with that. And it's a disgrace. And here's the thing, too. It's led to our nation as a whole nation. If you put our country on a psychiatrist's couch, we would be declared or deemed after an analysis as pathologically paranoid.
Actually,
the psychiatrist
would run out to his receptionist and say, "Get that nut out of here. I'm tired of talking to them. They're crazy."
It's true, because why are we the only one threatened by Iran and not Iceland or Sweden or maybe Fiji. Notice we're the only ones perpetually afraid that we're going to be invaded.
We're not afraid of Iran. Let me hit this point real hard, because this is something that all of you listening to this show need to be thinking about and posting everywhere you can. First of all, the United States is not afraid of Iran. We're like the biggest nuclear power on Earth. If Iran actually attacked the United States, Iran would be a glowing green glass parking lot 24 hours later, and they know it. Okay, Israel is saying they're afraid of Iran, therefore, by proxy, we in the United States must be afraid of Iran and be willing to throw the lives of our children and all of our money into whomping on yet another one of Israel's enemies. And if you notice, it's a pattern. You know, Israel says, oh, I'm afraid of Iraq. Boom, we invade Iraq. Oh, I'm afraid of Iran. Boom, we're getting ready to invade Iran. Israel just goes around saying, I'm afraid of them, I'm afraid of them, I'm afraid of them, I'm afraid of them, and the United States promptly goes on the attack. But here is something that you all need to remember, and please make a point of posting this everywhere you see this nonsense about the rise of an Islamic regime in Egypt. In 1979, Iran became an Islamic regime. Since 1979, the Islamic regime in Iran has not invaded anybody. Not once. Zero, zip, nada. In the same interval of time, the Jewish state in Israel has attacked Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Gaza, Lebanon again, Gaza again, Gaza again, Gaza again, along with the assassinations like the screw-up they had in Dubai, and attacks on humanitarian aid flotillas in international waters. At the same time that Iran has not attacked anybody or invaded anybody, the United States, officially a secular nation but predominantly Christian, has attacked El Salvador, Libya, Sinai, Lebanon, Egypt, Grenada, Honduras, Chad, Persian Gulf, Libya again, Bolivia, Iran, Persian Gulf, Kuwait, Iran, Honduras, ba 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 ba, many times often on behalf of Israel.
True.
So the reality is that the Islamic regimes are the peaceful ones. It is the Jewish state and the sort of kind of Christian state that are going out attacking and killing people left and right. And I don't want to be on the side of a bunch of, you know, Bible-banging murderers.
One other thing, too, though. The Egyptians, it is their canal, and I suggest for them that they change the name of the canal from Suez Canal to Egyptian Canal to remind the world who really owns it, who has the right to close it down. If they want, on a whim, they should be allowed to close down their canal. It's their
okay,
canal.
That's
their
not practical.
Destiny.
That's not practical, and I don't think they're going to do it.
Yeah, they would want
and
to make
I don't think.
It.
Yeah, I don't think the new government coming in is going to do that. It's, you know, it's like an engraved invitation to be bombed, right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, closing the canal will result in an immediate invasion, but they're not going to do that anyway because it's a moneymaker, and they're going to need all the money they can get because Mubarak, on his way out of town, is going to take everything he can lay his hands on in terms of, you know, hard assets.
But I just said that to elucidate a point, which was
yeah.
It's their destiny, and we have to butt out. I'm with you, Michael.
Yeah.
All right, sir.
Okay, thanks an awful lot. No, I will concede that there is a strategic concern of nations regarding the availability of the Suez Canal. Okay? But I think the concern of nations stops at the borders of the canal itself. And we don't really have any business whatsoever being in Egypt attempting to subvert or sabotage a democracy movement in order to prop up yet another tin pot dictator at a time when, you know, we're supposed to be the nation that supports democracy around the world. You can't have it both ways. And here is really the issue. The United States could very well succeed in forcing Omar Suleiman on the Egyptian people. The United States could very well succeed in obeying Israel's dictate to keep Mubarak in power in Egypt. But in so doing, must sacrifice and destroy America's image of being for democracy and rule by the people around the world. This will be a Pyrrhic victory because America cannot emerge from reasserting Mubarak's presence in Egypt with its historical image intact. America will lose more than it will gain by interfering in Egypt's internal affairs. There really is no way out of this thing. Unfortunately, Israel's calling the shots, and the U.S. government keeps saying, yes, master, yes, master, yes, master. And that's where it is. Jim in New Hampshire. Aloha, Jim. Welcome to the show. My brother tells me it is really snowy where you guys are right now.
Hey, yeah, it's kind of ugly out up here. It's that rainy, snowy, sleety mess all over the place. It's kind of nasty.
So what else is on your mind?
Well, a little while ago you were talking about investing in silver. I just wanted to follow that up real quick, and I had something else to get around to about Israel. But, yeah, I found that not only investing in silver and gold, which have their own kind of value, but I found that what I'm doing is trying to invest in any kind of physical property I can, anything that's long-lasting and that you could expect to be...
That has barter value, tools. I mean, that's why that thing about...
Tools,
you know,
yeah,
bring
that's
us,
what I was going to bring up.
Tools are a good thing to have. I got an email from people saying, I'm buying up brass and lead, so...
Brass and lead work. That's firearm ammunition, guns too. Like
yeah, white
like
lightning.
That.
You know, I'm trying to corner the market on white lightning around here. So,
but the other thing, what you were just talking about the last caller, particularly about Israel and kind of mounting tensions in the area. One of the things I saw, I want to say a month or two ago, I was really concerned about was Israel getting their hands on 20 to 40 F-35 aircraft from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw that as a kind of foreshadowing of what's to come. There's no cause for a country the size of Israel to have 40 of those, except for
Go out and become considerably larger than the size that Israel is right now. And again, if you look at the history of the maps of the region going back the last 60 years, it is Israel that is constantly trying to erase Palestine off of the map. And there is absolutely no question, given Israel's history of belligerence, that they have already used those planes against the Palestinians. In order to drive them out. I mean, if you really want peace in the Mideast, we should have given those 40 warplanes to the Palestinians. And Israel would have said, okay, we got to calm down here.
Yeah, I'm concerned more about them going after other, like, full-on other countries now, because their whole premise for going after Palestine is that they're not really a country and they can do whatever they want. But when it comes to the other countries, they have to have some kind of justification for going across the border or any of that. And with the aircraft, like the F-35 is the most advanced aircraft, from what I can read about it, that's available in the world right now.
It's the most advanced American aircraft, but some of the newer Soviet ones, I think, could probably give it a really hard time. Obviously Israel wants to go into Lebanon. They need that Litani River. They don't have enough water to support all those luxurious places they're building for themselves with our tax money, and they need that water. As far as Egypt and the Sinai are concerned, the scenario which seems most likely to me to, if the Egyptian protesters don't back down and let Mubarak stay, and it doesn't look like they're going to, then obviously the United States is going to militarily intervene. They've already got carriers and assault ships and marine divisions in the area, and that group from Connecticut is apparently trained up, and they're on the way in there as well. So they need an excuse that the American people will go for, and I think the Suez Canal, as we were talking with the previous caller, the Suez Canal is the most likely target. If you look at the Suez Canal through Google Earth or Flash Earth, it is very narrow in places. Going through the lakes that form part of the canal, you can see clearly it's dredged out, and the dredged channel is very, very narrow. If a container ship or a large oil tanker were turned sideways, crosswise to the traffic, and sunk, the whole canal would be inoperative for however long it took to get that ship wreck out of the path of travel. Might be a week, might be 2 weeks. And that would justify an American invasion on the western side of the Suez Canal and Egypt coming in and just grabbing the Sinai up to the Suez from the east. We got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you got to have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're going to go to Brian in North Carolina. Aloha, Brian. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
Anyways, I've gotten some word that right now blogs are being targeted by this organization. One of my most favorite websites is uswgo.com. They've just shut it themselves off due to a lawsuit.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people out there who don't think the people of the world should have access to opposing points of view from the government, and there are a great many groups which are aligned with governments and various political organizations that are attempting to shut down the blogs. And it is an attack on freedom of speech. It is an attempt to basically reimpose totalitarian control on the flow of information in the public. I think it is eventually doomed to fail, for the same reason that similar efforts that were mounted by the political structure in the wake of Gutenberg's invention of movable type also failed. When books became affordable for ordinary people, it was a serious threat to the lies that were coming out from the governments at the time, and certainly from the church. I mean, from Gutenberg to the King James Bible was almost an inevitable process, because prior to Gutenberg, individual churches felt perfectly free to just change the scriptures to suit whatever their own immediate agenda happened to be. And when Bibles became affordable, when you could buy a Gutenberg Bible, and all of a sudden people started saying, wait a minute, that's not what our church's Bible is saying. And it created this crisis that eventually led to, you know, the needing to standardize the Bible and get everything all back together, because you can't very well claim to be the Word of God when the church just down the road has a completely different description of about what's going on. So it was a huge social upheaval. There was an effort to try and get it back under the control of the church and under the government. Those institutions that were able to adapt to the new reality of a better informed populace survived, and those institutions that couldn't evolve and adapt to the new reality went extinct. And we're seeing the same process all over again right now. And yes, there is a war between those who want to control what you think and those who want information to be freely available to all, so that we may all make good decisions. Thomas Jefferson said, the highest duty of every American citizen is to keep yourself fully informed so that you can make good choices. And sadly, just turning on the TV set does not keep you fully informed in this day and age. Anything else?
Yes. It's not just that, but I've also heard that that the Forum Godlike Productions had received death threats, and that's why they shut off their site.
Well, reading the message that was on there, you know, definitely that would be the implication. We know that a lot of other bloggers have been threatened, and, you know, it's happened to me in the way, way past. I think at this point they realize it just sort of ticks me off and makes me work harder. But, yeah, there are a lot of bloggers and alternative sites that are being threatened. Anything they can bring to bear, suits, you know, now we've got the DHS going out saying they're going to start shutting down domains that merely link to copyrighted material, which is bizarre, because that would also include shutting down Google and Facebook and Twitter and various other sites. So it's a big gray area. The government is trying to pretend that it's acting within the letter of the law, but we know that they're absolutely not. And so the blogs are under attack, and that's why it's really essential that you support them. I mean, the big blogs that seem to have a lot of money usually have an imposed agenda. They're not allowed to talk about certain things. Huffington Post just sold to America Online for $315 million. They have never, ever allowed anybody to talk about alternative theories to 9/11 on their pages. Even Jesse Ventura was being censored by Huffington Post. And if you want to do what the New World Order wants, if you want to sell global warming and say 9/11, you know, the alternative theories are nonsense, and you know, Israel's feces do not smell bad, you will get a lot of money. You absolutely will get a lot of money. But if you're out there basically working to get the truth out to the people about all of these issues, about global warming is a fraud, and war is bad, and Israel does behave in very questionable ways in the international arena, and democracy is good, and the U.S. is bad for trying to prevent it in Egypt, then, you know, you're dependent on the advertisers that you can get in, and obviously donations from the listeners and readers. Because the only way you're going to get the big money influence out of the political system is for the little money to all gang together and get together and say, we're going to support, name your favorite blogger. But yeah, it is a war. The high ground for the war for the minds of America is right here. This is the front line in the war between truth and lies. It's right here in front of you on that keyboard, on that smartphone, on that radio that you're listening to. This is the front line. This is where the future course of America will be decided. And it's going to come down to a question of who wants it the most. because the first one to quit loses.
Yeah, totally agreed.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, that's it I have for now, but I just wanted to let you know because it was my favorite alternative news site, and I'm shocked to go on the site and I find out that they're scared that they're going to get harassed, and so now
yeah,
they're down.
It is a reality that we all have to live with every single day. And that there's really nothing else to do but just say, okay, that's something I accept. Thank you for the call. We're going to take a commercial break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Did you read this? Chicago just became the murder capital of America.
I don't understand. It's been a felony to have a gun since 95. I thought that was supposed to prevent murders, not increase them.
Criminals will always find a way to get guns, while the rest of us are just left defenseless.
Chicago authorities have seized over 75,000 firearms since 1995. And now, Chicago's murder rate is twice as high as New York City. Tonight, while you're asleep, criminals will be at work.
Not in Kennesaw, Georgia. In 1982, our city passed a law requiring every household to have a gun. It terrified the criminals, and our violent crime rate is now 75% below the national average. We sleep well here in Kennesaw.
Americans who own guns prevent over a million violent crimes every year and save lives. Get the facts. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to go back to the phones. Rand in Austin. Aloha, Rand. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Mike. I love your radio show.
Thank you.
I was just going to get your opinion on a theory I had here. In Austin, several months ago, there were several houses busted for having growing operations. They had marijuana growing there. It mm-hmm. turns out that, and this was all in, you know, the mainstream news here, in the American Statesman and on the Fox News radio station they have here, it turned out that they were cartel members, you know, that owned the operations.
Yes.
Well, nothing really happened, but they took those people in, and the other undercover agents must have, you know, shook those guys down pretty good or something, because the very next week, they go out and they bust several houses that were cartel operations here, where they had real high dollar printers and computers set up, and they were manufacturing all the illegal aliens documentation they needed, like passports, driver's licenses, whatever else. Be like, for several hundred bucks, an illegal can come up here and get a whole set of ID, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get in any trouble, then, you know, they can just get another set of it, you know. But anyway, that really irritated the cartels. And then the next thing in mainstream media we heard is that a lot of these undercover agents in Austin had to go underground because they were all worried that the Zeta cartel was going to kill their families.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you take this. What that basically said is, like, the Zeta cartel is up here in Austin, Texas. They are running the drugs. They are up here, and they're running immigration. If you look at the two single biggest sources of income that the whole country of Mexico has, number one is the amount of money being sent back by the workers here in the United States. That's their single largest source of income for the whole country. Number two is drugs. The Zeta cartel has taken over Mexico. These CIA-trained black ops thugs that just killed 72, God help you if you're a Guatemalan or a Honduran that gets caught in Mexico trying to make your way to the United States. They just executed 72 of them. There were 14 women and 58 men, all gangland-styled in one house, executed like just several months ago. Not one person arrested for that. You know, I think that what's happening here is that the corporate world, the bankers, they're streamlining this whole thing, like using the cartel, which is basically going to start running drugs and immigration, you know, all through North America. Well, they're already doing it, and it's just kind of blatant, like what's going on here. And I think the whole thing is not only government sanctioned, but I think Calderon is working for the cartel.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Colombia, we always talk about how bad Colombia is for drugs. They actually put one of their presidents on trial for aiding the drug cartels. He was acquitted, sadly, but at least they had the nerve to do that. But there's absolutely no question that here, drug money is enough to corrupt any government anywhere. Go back and look at the running of heroin from Vietnam through Hawaii to the United States during the Vietnam War, and then when the Vietnam War was lost, they started looking for something else to run, and it was cocaine from South America, which led to the whole Iran-Contra scandal. And now we're over in Afghanistan, and we've got these photos of U.S. troops guarding and protecting the opium poppy fields. Now, the Taliban had all but eradicated opium production in Afghanistan. And now the U.S. is back in control, and Karzai's brother is up to his neck in this drug corruption. And yeah, it is. If you want to look at what's going on with Mexico and what's going on with Arizona and Texas, go back and study the history of the Iran-Contra scandal, where there was a CIA-sanctioned cocaine smuggling gun-running operation out of Arkansas and several other places.
Eugene Hassenfuss.
Eugene Hassenfuss. Let's see, Felix.
Felix was killed. Rodriguez, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He was actually killed in that DC-3 that went down.
Yeah, and that it's a he was legendary. He was involved in the Kennedy assassination and the whole thing.
Well, he was one of Hunt's guys.
Yes, absolutely. And there are all these different code names around there: Operation Black Eagle, Operation Screw Worm. That was the one in Mexico that Felix was in charge of, and it was this whole operation that allowed the CIA to become insanely rich on drug money outside the control of the U.S. Congress. And they're back to playing the same games again. And that is why, when the cartels run into trouble with the police, and all of a sudden the police are informed very gently that the cartel knows where their families live. Because the CIA is able to break into the police computers because of all this total information awareness and just say, okay, here, cartel, here's a list of the names and addresses of the police officers that are giving you trouble. And it is that blatant and that open. When I was back in Los Angeles, I used to see it all the time. Even the best intentioned drug enforcement officer would just be absolutely blindsided by the fact that the other side had all the information on him. Remember how they stumbled across that Israeli spy ring just before 9/11 was reported on Fox News?
I love that.
The drug enforcement agencies were constantly, they'd show up to do a raid or a bust and everything would be gone. They found out Israel had broken into their communications.
Probably through Amdocs.
Through Comverse Infosys.
Right.
And Amdocs was involved as well, and they were breaking into the pager messages and basically identifying the cops and who they were talking to and giving this information to Israeli drug smugglers who were smuggling ecstasy into the United States. Ecstasy is basically pretty much that all comes from Israel now. And South America has the cocaine, and Afghanistan has the opium, and it's sort of divvied up that way. And
these cartel guys, I mean, they're like the mafia on Al Qaeda. I mean, they'll cut your head off. I mean,
these guys are worse. Mafia can't even begin to stand up to these lunatics, because they're using a lot of their own drugs. And my first wife was involved very heavily in recreational drugs. Now, she had sort of resigned from the business when I met her. And it's a really dark story and everything, but she used to tell me all these stories about stuff that was going on down there. And it is just, it's a nightmare. And two things you need to understand. First of all, when you're dealing with these drug cartels that are using their own product, they're not even functioning as human beings anymore because they're that whacked out on the stuff. Right. Second, it makes a joke about this whole TSA security grab your nuts at the airport stuff. Because if there were real terrorists who wanted to harm the United States of America, they can walk across that border from Mexico. There is nobody there to stop them.
Just wrap themselves in a big barrel of marijuana.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Take a nuclear bomb, wrap it in a bunch of cocaine, bring it in. It'll go right on past, and nobody will stop it.
Well, you know, I'm the one that called you a couple of weeks ago. I was on the plane going to New York when and Police Chief Acevedo from Austin, who was who was cherry picked basically by some think tank out of East L.A., was standing behind me on the plane, and he told me he was going with a delegation to Israel. You wouldn't believe it. I haven't seen one word about that in the news, in the media, at all, that he was even over there. It's like nobody even knows.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the day I got back from New York, I was over there for about a week, I get back and I open up the American Statesman, which is like, you know, their main newspaper here.
Yeah.
And there's an article in the front section about how Austin now has, check this out, 23 aerial drones that fly around spying on Austin citizens. They've got 50 pilots. This is the Washington Post. I Googled it up and found a Washington Post article that was just recently published about that article. And it said they're concerned about privacy issue. When the Post is worried about privacy issues, you know something's, you know, run amok here. But Austin is, I think, the, you know, like the kind of testing grounds for this whole new world order. I mean, it's like we've got spherical cameras, 360 cameras on every intersection in this town now. And now we've got 23 drones with 50 pilots. 50, 50
pilots. Well, here's
pilots.
My question. Okay, why are they spending this kind of money to put these drones over the city of Austin instead of along that border with Mexico? And, of course, obviously that's a rhetorical question because, you know, under the guise of terror and drug and everything, we live under a government that is terrified of the American people. They're looking at what happened in Egypt. They understand it's going to have to happen here because the money addicts will not change their behavior. They won't back off. I meant to get to this story in Ireland today. I'm going to have to take it into tomorrow's show, where basically the incoming government of Ireland is saying we're going to let the bondholders and the bankers go bust rather than loot the people. And the head of the European Union's central bank, their version of the Federal Reserve, has come in and said, "You absolutely will not. I don't care if the Irish people are starving to death in the alleys. You will make good on all of the loans that the IMF forced on you." And it's just, it's coming down to a war between the rich and the poor. And the rich have got all the weapons, but the poor are really ticked off.
Well, and there's a lot more poor than there are super rich.
There absolutely is. And, you know, the super rich would think, I've got the money, I can hire all the soldiers I need to go out and kill the poor. But the failure of that is people who are fighting for their lives and their loved ones within view are going to be far more effective soldiers than those who are just there to pick up a fast buck. That's the lesson that we learned.
And even the guys picking up the fast bucks, they're going out into the streets, they're realizing they're bombing their brothers and their mothers, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we're not prevailing in Afghanistan. It's why we're not prevailing in Iraq. It's why we lost Vietnam. Hired soldiers are never, it doesn't matter how much equipment you give them and the latest high-tech toys and how much you drug them up, which apparently is a big problem with the U.S. military right now, is they have to dope up the soldiers to get them to go out and commit murder and mayhem.
Well, that's why there's so much suicide. I mean, you come back from this, from, you know, being over there, you know, blowing up little kids and women and stuff, and you get over here and you got to live with yourself, and some of them just can't do it.
No, they can't. We saw the same thing after Vietnam. It was just a horrible, horrible situation. And yeah, and our government doesn't really, you know, care about these kids coming back home. They'll spend all the money to run them through 8 weeks of basic training to turn them into psychotic killers, and they don't spend a single penny helping them readjust to normal society, and they just completely fall apart. And again, the whole issue here is that we're not able to prevail in Afghanistan. I think we're losing in Iraq, despite all the talk about permanent bases there and everything, just like we lost in Vietnam. Because when you're paying people to invade other people's homes and take it away from them, the people trying to defend their homes, and that's all they've got, and they can lose it all, they're going to fight with a tremendous amount of fury. And they're not going to fight the war that you have planned to fight. They're going to go unconventional, which, again, that's why we lost in Vietnam. It's why we're not able to prevail in Afghanistan any more than the USSR did.
We've been in Afghanistan fighting over there for twice as long as we were in World War II. And were you the one that was talking about how Afghanistan was actually on the books for troop mobilization the day before 9/11 happened?
Yeah, there was a plan to invade Afghanistan before 9/11 happened. The United States government was informing other governments around the world of the plan to invade Afghanistan in October 2001. In March and April, it was in the BBC, it was in Jane's Defense, it was in all these media around the world, except here in the United States, where we were getting all Gary Condit all the time. You know, where was Chandra Levy? It was a sex scandal, and basically the
boogeyman du jour.
Yeah, we call it, you know, we call it conditizing now, where the media goes out and gives you something, little tawdry sex scandal, to try and hold your attention, so you're not paying attention to what the government is really doing. It's like this thing with all these ambassadors called in from 260 countries around the world. That's a lot of money to haul those people around the planet for a private meeting in Washington, D.C. They're not doing that to discuss the company picnic. Something big is in the works. I've had readers emailing me all day long about how Associated Press is doing all these stories about Holocaust this, and Dumnyanyuk is in the news again. And we were noticing over this last weekend, again, History Channel with all the Hitler this and Nazis that. And anytime they start flooding the media with Nazis and Hitler, it means Israel is getting ready to unleash something really, really bad on the world.
Yeah. People don't realize that, you know, I mean, like, I've got, my wife's brother is a dentist here in Austin, and he's Lebanese. He's Christian. You know, at least 50% of the people in Lebanon are Christians. You know, they don't really like Hezbollah, but, like, when the Israelis start dropping cluster bombs on them, they're not being discriminate and just killing Hezbollah. They're killing all kinds of people.
They were killing the UN observers last time. I mean, you know, and anybody who complained about it, he said, oh, you're just being an anti-Semite.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can't talk about Israel's foreign policy without being accused of being a Jew hater.
Well, you know, we can't criticize Hitler without being accused of being a German hater, so it all works out.
Yeah, you know, people, you know, look at me sometimes and go, Rand, if I start ranting about, you know, the fact that Elliot Abrams is running our foreign policy in the Middle East, you know, and they don't even know who the guy is, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like, well, if you hate our government, you hate our country so much. I don't hate my country. I do hate my government, but I love my country. I love my country enough to talk about it and to not just sit by like some sheeple and, you know, just let this thing go by without at least speaking my mind about it. No, it's more important that we all stand up and shove it up there. You know what? It's because that's who cares about things. You know, it's like, you know, don't let people say, give you that love it or leave it crap, because you know, the fact that you love it is why you're speaking
They're trying to wrap the mass murderer in a flag. I love my country, or at least I love the country I was told that I lived in, the one that's described in the Declaration of Independence, the one that is in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, at least as far as the 13th Amendment. Okay? I love that country enough to save it from the money addicts.
Right.
And the hallucinated religious fanatical people who think holy war on other people's lands is their path to whatever heaven they think they're going to go to. But I do love my country, and very, very much so. And I miss what it used to be. I remember back, you know, in the 1960s at the heyday of Apollo, just this sheer joy at what a wonderful nation we were in.
And as long as you weren't black.
Yeah, as long as you weren't black or Vietnamese. And, you know, and you could feel good about the nation, and we've lost so much. And part of it is, yeah, there was a dark side to the nation even then that most of us did not see, because we did not have an internet and an alternative media. And
the CIA wasn't slowing down in those days either.
Well, the FBI's COINTELPRO program was very successful in marginalizing and sabotaging those who were trying to speak out about you know, the unfair attacks on the civil rights movement, the attacks on the early feminists, the attacks on the Native Americans, and, of course, the war in Vietnam. These days, it's a very, very different environment. The fundamental nature of the flow of information through society has changed dramatically. And, again, I think our hope for a future and a better America is that the government and the corporate media and the religious institutions still don't quite grasp how very different the info environment is. And they're still trying to play the game by the rules that worked at the height of the Cold War, including setting up very obvious phony information sources in an attempt to distract us, like WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. By and large, though, I don't think it's working. In the long run, we are going to see a whole new age come about where governments are just going to have to live with the reality that it's not as easy to fool the people. as it was back in the days of Ramses the Great. Rand, thank you for the call. We're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be back with the closing segment of our show.
What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And getting back to Egypt, I had so much other stuff I wanted to talk about today, but well, I just have to take it into tomorrow. We are getting reports that the Egyptian police, Mubarak's police, are using live ammunition on the protesters, not just rubber bullets, not just the tear gas they got from Israel and the United States. Apparently down in Helwan, south of Cairo, that whole area, they call it the New Valley, southwest of Cairo, protesters were basically asking that certain people in the local government that they feel have been abusive of the Egyptian people be removed, and they got into a fight. Live ammunition is being used, and this is happening in several areas. As a result, we're now getting stories that protesters are starting to attack and burn the police stations in many of the Egyptian provinces. Obviously, I understand the rage. Mubarak's people started the violence, and there comes a point where even Gandhi is going to say, screw it, kick him in the balls. But obviously, if violence starts to spread, this plays right into the hands of Mubarak and the United States. Obama is looking for anything to happen that he can use as an excuse to send in the Marines and somehow be able to convince the American people that crushing a pro-democracy movement is somehow consistent with a nation founded on the principles of democracy. He's looking for that excuse. Now, another story is surfacing that we all need to be aware of. Pretty much all observers are saying that the buildup to this explosive situation in Egypt actually began with the bombing of a Coptic church in Alexandria on New Year's Eve. 24 people were killed, and it was blamed initially on Muslims. Gee, does that sound familiar, right? It now turns out the former Egyptian interior minister carried out the bombing, working for Mubarak, in an effort to diffuse anger at the government by tricking the Christians and the Muslims into fighting each other. Does this also not sound familiar? We've seen that in the United States government for decades. Get the blacks fighting against the whites, getting the women hating the men, getting the young angry with the old, keep them stirred up, divide and conquer. Do anything you can to prevent the people from coming together and realizing they are a people, and that the common enemy of all the people are the money addicts. Now, as word of the fact that Mubarak's interior minister set off the bomb, the anger that they tried to generate between the Muslims and the Christians has evaporated. And as we reported yesterday, Christians are joining the Muslims in the protests against the government. So this thing is going to continue to grow. As I said, the wild cards in the situation right now is the U.S. government clearly is looking for a reason, a justification that they can send in the troops without appearing to be anti-democratic. But they are. Any attack on Egypt's democracy movement by the U.S. government is an attack on democracy itself. It is treason against the founding principles of the United States of America and should be regarded as such by Americans. That's it for our show. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock Central here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Until then, stay safe, stay well, be very careful on these winter roads, and aloha, America.